Well, Danielle, we haven't gotten many of these games recently. The Jays winning a relatively drama-free affair down here at the Rogers Center amidst another bee or probably wasp attack on the opposing team. Happened to Lindor a couple days ago. Nolan Arenado. It looks like he got stung by like a wasp inside his glove.
That's crazy.
I have it on good authority. Rob Longley got stung by a wasp today. The press box.
I was going to mention this. I was sitting there, and there were, I kid you not, right above where I was stationed watching the game, second, third inning, there's just this bee circulating. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, no. And then I read the tweets, and I see what's going on. And then Arenado, it's too poetic, man. It's too poetic. It's that September air.
That's true.
They like it. A little cool. It's nice. This is a good temperature, and they love it.
They do. They really do. They're sometimes up here in the radio booth. Thankfully, they did not bother us too much, and thankfully, they did not bother the Blue Jays too much today, which is nice. The Blue Jays getting 7 innings from Jose Berríos, although there was one buzzing around his hat late in the game, but it did not seem to bother him. 7 innings from Berríos. The Blue Jays score 7 runs. Big day from David Schneider. They grab a series win over the Cardinals. It's their first series win since they swept the Angels at the end of August, but today a 7-2 win over the Cards here at the Dome.
Show really impressive. I think there are two things I want to cover, but let's start with Berríos. I thought he was impressive yet again. 7 victories in a row now. He's in some really, really special company when it comes to that accomplishment, that achievement among the lore of Blue Jays history. He's the first pitcher to do that since Roy Halladay in 2003, which is incredible. There have been only 3 other gentlemen who have worn this uniform that have been in that position previously. So credit to Jose Berríos. I thought he continued to get better as the outing progressed. The home run he gave up to Jordan Walker, hanging slurve, middle. That pitch was begged to be hit a long way. Jordan Walker did damage, but then apart from that, gives up just 2 hits over 7. In command the entire way through, looked like he was just confident in all of his pitches, and again, with the exception of that mistake to Walker, he was terrific. Also, of course, show big day for David Schneider, who that has to feel real good. I mean, the home run, it starts off with a big homer going the opposite way. You could see the dugout was just lighting up with excitement, beaming with energy, because of course they know how much he struggled and the work that's gone in to get to this point today where he can have a 3-for-4 outing. Just a really great atmosphere at the ballpark. You got to feel good. Positive result. A lot of guys chipping in and contributing. Just a great team win for the Blue Jays today, 7-2, as they take the series against the Cardinals.
That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. We have a lot of stuff to give away as well, Danielle.
Nice.
You want to win some stuff? All you have to do, as you guys know, if you are a regular listener to the program, all you have to do is basically text your answer to this question that I'm going to ask in the second half of the show, because I'm just going to double-check the answer to make sure it's correct. But we will throw out a question, and if you get it correct, again, texting your answer to 590-590, name and location. There's some Carabana hats remaining. There is a Boba Fett bobblehead. And we also have the City Connect short sleeve hoodie to give away, which was one of those like late giveaways they added this season. So we have one of those to give away as well. But it's gonna be Jose Berríos themed. Okay, it's gonna be in honor of Jose Berríos. But again, we'll throw out that question for you to shoot in your answer on 590-590, name and location after the break. I did want to talk about Jose Berríos, though. Coming into this game, since the beginning of July, Berríos had a 3.73 ERA over 12 starts. Since the beginning of August, Berríos has a 2.36 ERA. That's over his last 6 starts. At the beginning of August, Danielle, Berríos had gotten hit by the Yankees. I think the game was in New York, but he got hit by the Yankees for 5 earned runs. He lasted 5 innings in that game, all right? Mm-hmm. After that, including today, but if you just go back to the last 6 outings after that Yankees game, He has not thrown less than six innings of work in any game since. Here are the innings pitched for him. Seven innings, seven and two-thirds, six innings, and then today, seven innings. He continues to set a new career high. You mentioned it. Now 16 wins on the season. He is now at 99 career wins with 13 games to go this season. So, you know, 13 games to go. They're 2 days off. I'm going to say probably the way it falls is two more starts for Berríos before the end of the season. So I know wins are not exactly what they used to be. Like, I know we don't exactly evaluate pitchers based on whether or not they get the win, because I think, you know, bullpens have kind of changed that. Quality starts, I feel like you can kind of look towards a little bit more, but even then it's kind of tough, right? Because quality starts are six innings and three earned runs, so you don't even get that sometimes. Like, if a pitcher gives you five and two-thirds and two or three earned runs, you probably take it, but often you don't. They don't often qualify for the quality start or the win, so I know that's not exactly what it was when we were younger, but gosh, I mean, maybe two more starts for Berríos. Maybe he gets 100 career wins. I still think that's very impressive for someone like him.
Yeah, the magic number is 32. 32 starts is the magic number. They're going to get him to 32. So he's 100% going to start two more times.
Okay, all right.
Provided, of course, he's healthy and nothing goes wrong.
Yeah.
But the reason that number is significant is because he's done it for 4 years in a row. You know, we then remove the COVID season. It's even longer now that he's had 32 starts in a season. Very few pitchers in Major League Baseball can claim to have that on their resume. In addition, Shel, here's a number that maybe is more instructive of just how valuable and effective Berríos has been. We say, of course, in terms of the pitching statistic wins, he's got 16, career high, continues to grow, and is now surpassed, of course, the previous total, which was 14. But when today was start number 30 for José Berríos, in the 30 starts, in the games where he has pitched, started the game on the mound for the Blue Jays, they are 21-9 this season. And I think, to me, that is more instructive in a lot of ways, because it highlights that when he is taking the ball every fifth day, the Jays have a very good chance of winning a baseball game. Yeah. I think that, to me, as much as 16 individual wins are impressive, you know, I do certainly look at quality starts. I value those because of the sort of the parameters under which they exist. Generally, if you go six, you give up three or fewer, that you're putting your team in a position to win. But 21-9 is a real number. That is certainly indicative of a guy that is giving you an opportunity to win games, and he's putting you in a position where you can consistently compete for victories. Difficult to do in the major leagues, and when you're doing it on a regular basis, I mean, that needs to be recognized and acknowledged. So that, to me, is the more impressive stat, because that is encompassing all aspects of the game, everything that's going on. When he's on the hill, they generally win, and that is a positive development, deserves a lot of credit. He's been absolutely nails, and a lot of it is home runs have started to go down as well. Gives up his 29th of the season today, but guess what? In his last seven starts now, show, he's allowed four compared to 25 in the previous, I think it was 22 outings or so. So you're seeing improvement in that area as well. He's just been excellent all around.
The pitch mix from Berríos has been interesting to monitor all season long as well, because one thing we always talk about with Berríos over the last several years, like certainly, like, I mean, his whole career, but certainly since he's become a Blue Jay, the pitch we talk about the most has been a slurve. And the slurve this season, I would say on the whole of the year, even when he was, like, for the month of, like, the March and April there, when he was sitting at an ERA below one, essentially, when he was basically one of the best pitchers in baseball for the span of, like, six, seven starts or whatever it ended up being, he was, like, nothing was going wrong for him. FIP was pretty high, so maybe there was an element of luck there. And things did turn, obviously, because, I don't know, like, even the guy who wins the Cy Young this year is going to have an ERA greater than one. I mean, that's just how it is, right? But, you know, I think there was some questions even then as to how the slurve was always working. And as the season went on, it kind of felt like the slurve just wasn't breaking as much as it usually had. So in the last couple of starts, all season we've been looking at this, but specifically in the last couple of starts, I've been very curious as to how that slurve has looked and what the usage of the slurve has looked like, because he's kind of made, he's kind of leaned even further towards the sinker. I mean, he always used the sinker in conjunction with the slurve. He uses both of those two pitches a lot, right? So, you know, it's not like he completely fell off using the sinker even when the slurve was working really, really well for him. But in the last couple of starts, even if you just look at today and the previous start, which is on September 7th against the Braves, the last time out, He threw 37 sinkers to 23 slurves. He threw 16 fastballs, one cutter, and 13 changeups. So by and large, he got by on the sinker and slurve, and he had kind of decreased the usage of the four-seam fastball as opposed to what he had been doing when the slurve really wasn't working. Today, for example, a little more, you know, maybe slightly more even between the sinker and slurve, 35 sinkers, 30 slurves, 12 changeups, 17 four-seam fastballs, three cutters. So the usage, again, with the other pitches outside of that sinker and slurve have largely been the same, but it is nice to see that he felt that it was working for him. And, I mean, gosh, when you've been on the run he has been, it kind of feels like everything's working for him.
I like that you referenced that. In the last two starts, here's one other factor I would point to, show. Look at the lineup construction of the teams that he was facing. The Braves, their best hitters are predominantly right-handed guys, right? That is a fact. So with him in particular, that's where, against teams that are very right-handed heavy, and certainly every team has sort of platoon lineups that they'll throw together, but generally your best players are in there. So against teams whose best players are right-handed batters, he'll throw the sinker more. Why? Because he likes having that two-seam run that tails more away, as opposed to against the lefties, that the danger you see with him sometimes is if that sinker two-seam action starts leaking over the plate, and he hates that. So that's why I think you see him kind of deviate a little bit. Generally, it's pretty even across the board in terms of what he's doing, but he likes to use the four-seamer a lot more against left-handers. He likes to use the sinker, conversely, a lot more against righties. But then today the slurve was lights out. The slurve was very good, except he made that one mistake. The one mistake to Jordan Walker. And after that, I mean, heck, there was a strikeout at one point, and I forgive me what inning it was, down and away, just located it perfectly right outside on the outside quadrant of the strike zone, gets a swing and miss, and I'm thinking, yeah, he's dialed in. It was like the fifth or sixth inning. He just looked great. He had full command of that pitch today. And we know when he's got it going, then he's just as good as anybody in baseball when it comes to being a starting pitcher and producing for his team. That's how you get a sense early with Berríos. Is he locating the fastball, and is the slurve working? And if those two things are, it's going to be a long day for the opposing team.
Yeah, only four strikeouts for Berríos today over 97 pitches. But still, I mean, he can get the strikeout numbers up to a gaudy amount at certain points. But I didn't really need to rely on the strikeout today. Got a lot of ground balls, got a lot of really soft contact. It didn't look like any of the batters, again, outside of the one mistake to Walker, didn't really look like a lot of the batters could get into the ball, into their swing as much as they usually can. And I mean, yeah, like, it's been a down year for Arenado. It's been a bit of a down year for Paul Goldschmidt, who won the MVP 2 years ago. This is true, right? These are true things as well. Cardinals really scuffling, but I don't think that necessarily should take away from what Berríos has been doing. He's been very impressive. Let's go to the phones, Daniele. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll go to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. But let's go to the phones. Let's go to Hamilton. Matthew joining us from Hamilton. Matthew, what's up?
Hey, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good, man. How's it going with you?
Yeah, not too bad. Always nice to get a winning edition of Blue Jays baseball. I had a couple questions for you guys, actually. So first and foremost, I'm sorry to keep bringing it up with Vladdy and the potential extension that's coming, if it does. But if you guys can talk about from a front office perspective as to why this is taking so long. Is this, you know, some sort of strategy on their part? Like, you know, what's the motivation behind them waiting so long to get him extended? And I'm going to call it a little bit later on in the week to talk to Blair and Barker, because I want to ask them this as well. But I want you guys' take on this. And Barker's been saying that, you know, two thumpers and a closer is what's going to get this team over the line and potentially back into the playoffs next year. So I'm curious as to what you guys think would be an ideal 1-9. I mean, if we want to throw some names into that, by all means. You know, one caveat, though, I will not accept Juan Soto as an answer, because there is absolutely no chance he will ever be a Blue Jay unless he's 40 years old and looking for a 1 year with, like, on a $5 million deal. So I would love your takes on that. Thanks again, and talk to you guys soon. All the best.
Great. Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate the call. It's funny. It's funny, the Juan Soto thing. I will say this on Juan Soto, at the very least. I think there will be a phone call that takes place.
Uh-huh.
I think there will be a genuine conversation. I think there might even be an offer presented. Uh-huh. But I tend to agree with Matthew that he is not leaving New York.
Yeah,
sure. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get me wrong. Like, I think that conversation will happen mainly because, like, it'd be stupid for there not to be a conversation. You know what I mean? Like,
you have to.
Like, you have to. Like, I also say that about maybe not every team in Major League Baseball. Like, there's no chance the Pirates are calling him to be like, hey, we're gonna give you $700 million, Juan. Like, that's not happening, right? The Pirates are not doing that. But the teams that all have big-time pockets, and the Blue Jays are certainly one of them, mm-hmm. will place that phone call and might even put a contract in front of him. But, I mean, let's face it. The two teams that are going to sign him, one of the two teams, I should say, will be the Yankees or the Mets. He will not mm-hmm. play next year for a team that is not the Yankees or the Mets. And if it's the Blue Jays, I will happily eat my words. But I tend to agree with Matthew that it seems unlikely.
Agreed. Both teams in New York bidding for the same free agent. That seems like what we're destined for. I can also add to the list of teams joining the Pirates that are going to be firmly outside, like in a different continent when it comes to the sweepstakes of Juan Soto. Let's throw the White Sox in there. Let's throw the A's, 150% the A's,
yes, the A's
into that category. I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody else. Those were the two that immediately popped into my mind for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Brewers. They spend money on absolutely nobody.
And then I'll throw the Rays in there as well.
Yes, Rays are good. Great choice, show. I love that. That's it. Those are the ones I think we can safely say for sure. They're not even having that conversation inside behind closed doors. They're not even bringing up his name. As far as I'm concerned, from my perspective, show, and I've said this to you before, unless he's standing in this building with the jersey in his hand, I don't care. Please don't talk about it. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I refuse to get seduced and sucked in to the vortex of believing Juan Soto to Toronto might be a thing. I don't want to hear about it unless he is literally in December or November standing at home plate in this building with whoever's running the team, probably Mark and Ross, and holding a jersey. If that's the case, with Scott Boras beside him, wonderful. Wonderful. But if it doesn't happen, don't call me. I don't want to hear about it.
It was kind of like, you remember when Kawhi was traded to the Blue Jays? I wonder what that would look like. Kawhi traded to the Raptors, and everyone was kind of like, Kawhi's not going to report. He's not going to report to the team. Like, it's never going to happen. And even, like, I was a little skeptical he was going to actually suit up until I actually saw him sit next to Masai Ujiri on media day, and we got, like, the laugh and the I'm a fun guy thing, will live in infamy in the city's history. But that's what I really believed it when I, like, saw him with my own eyes.
Yes.
I think that's what would have to happen, even if Jeff Passan was reporting that he signed with the Blue Jays, which, I don't think is going to happen. Okay, but for Matthew's other questions, two thumpers and a closer, names, I think for me, I'll say this, closers and bullpen names I find really hard to forecast, mainly because you can cobble together a list of names that I would say most people are not familiar with going into next year. Now, of course, like the closer type names, like if we're talking about the Cardinals selling pieces off, I mean, if it's a Ryan Helsley that's available, that's the guy you pick up a phone call for, or you pick up the phone and make a call for, right? Like that's the kind of name. You know, if Camilo Doval, I know he got optioned this year, but mm-hmm. I mean, if he's available, like the familiar names who are closers, those are the guys you actually trade real assets for. But I tend to believe that for the most part, bullpen names, closer names, or guys who might come a little out of the woodwork that you might not be super familiar with. For me, I think I would still lean position player-wise to left field and DH as to where I would put the thumpers that Barker often references. Like, yeah, could you get a thumper at third base? For sure. Could you move Flatty to third base and get a thumper at first base? You also absolutely could do that. But I think I would prefer a thumper in left field and DH, and like if I could pick, if I could pick a realistic candidate, I think I would pick two of the three of these names: Anthony Santander, Tyler O'Neill, or Teoscar Hernandez. If two of those three guys are your left fielder and DH next year, I think that would work really well for this team.
Yeah, I like that. I was going to mention Santander and O'Neill for sure. What I really like with Santander is the ability to hit from both sides of the plate. Like, that's a huge thing. And with the power he possesses, clearly that makes him a real big asset, helps your lineup in a significant, appreciable way. Then when I look at the other area, let's say if we're really thinking about just – we're thinking two thumpers, okay? I understand your thought when it comes to Teoscar and Tyler O'Neill. I would personally, if you could land Tyler O'Neill or Santander to play in left field and then maybe mix in as a DH, so then your Joey Loperfido or whoever your fourth outfielder is also mixing in as a platoon, that to me works. The other position I would look at, I would say I think either Alex Bregman or, and I don't know this is realistic, but Willy Adames would be a terrific fit.
See,
can you move him, though, to third base? Would that be something he'd entertain? Now, to me, then, I think your lineup looks really potent. And Santander would certainly be the preference because of the ability to hit from both sides. You place him anywhere in your lineup. Yeah. It balances things beautifully. That even if you have, three right-handed bats in Vladdy, Bregman, and Bo, you'd still then be able to break things up a little bit with a guy in Santander that can do that. In terms, go ahead, Jim.
Well, so I just wanted to go back on the Willy Adames thing, because I have said on this program that I think Willy Adames, if I could pick just one free agent that I think is a realistic get for this team, I think Willy Adames is that guy, and I think he is so good. I really do. I think he has a chance to be one of the better shortstops in Major League Baseball. I mean, he already is, I would say, but like going forward, even if he gets paid a bucket load of money, I think he's going to continue being very valuable the way he plays for quite some time. But I just saw this text from Paul in Toronto. Hey, show is one of the two thumpers not already on the team, his salary counted, Bo Bichette. And I think like the Bo Bichette news, to Paul's point, of the past, week and a half or whatever, whenever it was that Shai reported that Bo had those comments before he went out on a rehab assignment. By the way, he's going to be playing at shortstop for 6 or 7 innings tonight, which that game starts in, I'm not sure if it's actually already started, actually. But,
it
had some strange start times in the minors. But he was DHing for the first couple of games. He had an RBI single yesterday, went 1-for-4, and tonight he is playing at short. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that over these next couple of days. Maybe he rejoins the team when they go on the road trip next Tuesday in Texas to play the Rangers. But, you know, I think it's an interesting idea, because if Bo is on the team next year, I think it basically eliminates the Blue Jays from signing Willy Adames. I think it's like a done deal. I don't think it happens. And here's the reason why is because if Bo wasn't on the team, it would make the need for a shortstop, even if you have to pay him a boatload of cash, it would make it almost at the top of the list, essentially.
Uh-huh.
Right? Even if you feel pretty comfortable about Leo Jimenez. And by the way, Leo Jimenez, who had been removed from the starting lineup before the game, x-rays are negative. The team called it a contusion, the right index finger contusion. So he is day to day. Joey Loperfido, adductor muscle discomfort. He is also day to day. But I only bring it up because if Bo is on the team to start the year, then there's just like not a need to spend, because Willy Adames is going to get a lot of money.
Yes,
he's going to get paid like $325 to $350 million dollars.
Really,
that's like
so?
The going rate for shortstops now. That's what Bo will get if he hits shorts. If he hits free,
you know what? That's just like
the cost of doing business at that position now.
I think a Trey Turner too. He got paid.
That's what I mean.
Same with Corey Seager.
Dansby Swanson got paid a
bowl of money. Yeah, he was over $200 million dollars. Yes,
Willy Adames is probably a better player than Dansby Swanson, right?
But here's the one caveat I'll provide.
Great.
If you do that and you can indicate long term, we want you to be the shortstop, okay? Because you essentially have 1 year left of Bo, right? You're setting yourself up to have a competitive team in 25, but then inevitably if that happens, then I think it signals probably the end of Bo after the 2025 season. But if that's the case, then you're able to move that guy from third base right over to shortstop
and say,
that's your home. We have a solution. To me, that's a better situation than going into next year where we have sort of question mark at second, question mark at third, where it's maybe a couple different guys factoring in. And then there's the looming thought in your mind that after the 25 season, who's the shortstop? You can answer that question in free agency this year. That will help your team right now and also shore up your shortstop position long term after Bo's future is finally decided.
But maybe Bo's the shortstop of the future long term. We don't know.
Maybe. That's what maybe. I mean. But then go sign him. Go sign him then if that's what the solution is. Right? I don't know. To me, it's a this is the question actually I did want to also ask, Joe. And I'm curious where you land on this.
Okay.
It's kind of applicable to now because we're going to see it for 2 weeks, but it's more about next year. Where should Bo hit? Where should Bo hit in this lineup? What's the ideal spot?
Second, I guess?
See, I feel the same way, but I see there are a lot of differing opinions on this. I think, personally,
I wouldn't hate him batting cleanup.
Same.
If we think he is the Bo of old, but two or four seems about right.
I agree. I know, and I saw that Barker was tossing around the idea of hitting him leadoff.
Okay.
I don't like it. Here's the one thing I want, especially if he's on the team next year.
I'm going to tell Barker you said that.
These last 2 weeks, I don't like it. I really don't. heck, this contradicts even what Barker has said before, because I think Barker would agree. Generally, you put your most reliable hitter second in the lineup for a variety of different reasons. However, I want Bo and Vlad to hit next to each other. That's all I want. However you arrange it, whether it's Vladdy third, Bo fourth, or Bo second, Vladdy third, let them hit next to each other. The most productive they've been in their careers is when they've hit next to each other. Vlad has finally been left alone in the three hole, not to be touched, and he had a career year in 2021 when he hit third exclusively. 2024, he's hit exclusively out of the three hole. Boom. Right there now, we've seen this resurging year from Vlad. Let Bo hit second and don't touch him. That would be my advice. Don't touch him. And I feel like I would feel personally comfortable if he was second. I would also feel okay with him hitting fourth because I do think he can be a decent run producer, uses all parts of the field, but that's sort of where I land on that.
To your point, at the very least, with the Bisons, and actually they did start, I believe this is Eastern time, 6:05 p.m. Eastern is when they got started, but he is batting second for the Bisons today,
go.
So there you go. Not that necessarily is an indicator of where he will hit like in 2 years or whatever for the Blue Jays, but that is where he is hitting tonight versus the Gwinnett Stripers at Cool Ray Field. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that, as I said earlier, over these next couple of hours going into tomorrow. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Alberta. Brendan is in Alberta. Brendan, what's up?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Spencer Horowitz.
Sure.
So he's been, like, really good this year, I think. But for me, if this team going forward adds somebody who is going to be either, hitting in that DH first base spot. I mean, like, everybody's talking about Pete Alonso or Santander, and he would be a kind of a right field DH type. The defense for him is not good enough for me at second base to play every day there. You saw the double play Wagner snagged yesterday's game was just an unbelievable stop to make that turn, and I just don't think Horowitz quite has the lateral movement to make enough of those plays count. I get catch a ball right at you and turn the double play, but for me, I think your second baseman needs to do a little bit more than just that. Obviously, have a bit of a bat too, but when I look at it, like when you're looking at the teams that have guys that you'd like on your major league roster, guys like Luis Robert Jr. from the White Sox or Brent Rooker, for example, from the Oakland Athletics, trading for one of those guys, instead of trying to go out and sign two boppers and a closer, like you're not going to be able to sign everybody that you need in order to improve this lineup. So centering a trade around Spencer Horowitz as a big league player already, with a bit of a proven track record now at the major league level, to me makes a little bit of sense. As much as I like the guy, I like watching him hit, I like his plate approaches, everything he's doing right now. I mean, it's been great to watch, but I think you need a little bit more power out of that spot, or at least position in the roster and both first base and DH.
Well, Brendan, let me ask you this then, because this is something I've discussed with a variety of our colleagues here at The Fan, but you know, when you look at what Horowitz's future is, and yeah, it's true. I mean, he could very well get traded. I've had a whole bunch of people say that's definitely at least a possibility. But when you look at Horowitz, let's say he is on this team next year, but Vladdy is still getting the majority of starts at first base, and like second base is some platoon of Will Wagner and Ernie Clement, let's just say, okay? So if that's the case, then it doesn't leave a lot of spaces for Horowitz to play. Would you be satisfied knowing that Horowitz hits the crap out of righties and just doesn't really play a lot against lefties and is not great against lefties? If he was, let's say, the backup first baseman, you know, he's at first whenever Vladdy is moved to third or is DHing, would you be fine with that?
I wouldn't have a problem with that, but that means you're up. I want to see him better in the outfield, and that gets back to George Springer as well. I don't think he can be, like, he needs to be a bench bat going into next year. As much as having $40 million for the next two seasons on the bench kind of blows, but it's like, you can't have that kind of just league average production at the plate taking up a leadoff spot going forward. So, like, if you upgrade your outfield, okay, then you can move him to as a first base DH type. But if you don't and you're leaving Springer as an everyday player, then you need to move Horowitz and get somebody else that's more offensively capable.
Hey, Brendan, appreciate the call, man. Appreciate the conversation here on Jay's Talk. Danielle, I know you are I'm not trying to say you're low on Spencer Horowitz by any means, but I do know when we've had conversations about Horowitz in the past, mm-hmm. I know you've expressed your doubts about like what his, maybe ceiling is the wrong word, but just what his future is with the Blue Jays.
Well, where does he fit? Does he hit? I mean, you know, it's funny because we talked about this last week, and then he proved me wrong. He went out and had two homers
almost
in the ball
game. Four home runs.
It was insane, and he's had a nice run here. I think if you're going to be a backup first baseman / primary DH or whatever the arrangement might be, if he is on the roster, because clearly they've deviated from second base, or at least it seems that way, then you better be able to provide above average offensive production. Yeah. That is the nature of the job. The way he's being deployed right now, the main priority for him is to go into the box, have great at-bats, hit for some power, and be a run producer. That's essentially what the role that is being conveyed to him is right now, because he's not playing second base, a position that requires a different level of defensive aptitude, right? You're like, your first baseman, your DH, they better be able to produce for you offensively. And so if he's a guy that can hit 20, 25 homers, if he were to get a full complement of games over an entire season, sure, you sign up for that. But am I skeptical because we've only seen an X amount of games? Yes, I'm naturally skeptical and apprehensive about that. I just don't know that I would feel very comfortable or confident after 2 years of circling a bunch of question marks in the lineup every year that we go into 2025 having Spencer Horowitz featured prominently in the opening day lineup or as a premier piece of your team when I just want... I think it's time you need some more bona fides. You need some guys that are kind of penciled in as they're going to give us bare minimum, you know, 20 homers, 80 RBI in the right situation, provided they're healthy. And I don't know if you can answer that question with Spencer Horowitz right now because, A, we haven't seen a ton of him, but, B, historically, throughout his entire professional career show, he's never proven to be a power hitter. It's not part of his DNA. It's never been part of his game. In fact, that's part of the reason it took him so long to finally break through and be on this major league roster. They didn't feel like as a first baseman, he provided enough offensive upside to factor in as an everyday player at the major league level. And so I think you have to do your due diligence and ensure you're looking to upgrade in that regard this winter. You absolutely have to. I do think... And it was Brendan. Was it Brendan that we were talking to there?
Brendan, yes, Brendan.
I think Brendan made a great point on the trade front. We're all thinking about a lot of this through the prism of, well, who's available in free agency? Who can you throw money at? Who's going to be maybe open to the idea of coming and playing for the Blue Jays? Well, there's a whole trade market that is also there for you to discover, for you to try and extract value from. And, you know, Brent Rooker's a great suggestion. Sure. Luis Robert, I'd be a little bit iffy because the White Sox still value him highly. But Rooker's an awesome one. Like, you can find other guys via trade that can step in and make an impact for your team. There's no doubt about it. So I think that is a great point that Brendan raised there, something to be mindful of as we move forward here into the offseason.
My only concern with the trade market, it's not really a concern because you can certainly work the phones and get trades, but make trades. But it's just, I think, you know, if we accept that the Blue Jays farm system is not all that, and that the ceiling for some of these guys is relatively low, for guys that would be traded, rather, relatively low, then surely other teams would see. Like, I think it's not that they can't make trades. They certainly can. I actually do think that Brent Rooker is someone who's, like, relatively gettable. But I just wonder if other teams probably see it the same way, too. And if the Blue Jays get into some kind of competition with, let's say, the Yankees or the Dodgers or other teams that need guys like Rooker who are blasting 30 home runs a year, they're probably going to lose if the battle is for assets from the farm system or from the major league roster that will get you a Brent Rooker, for example, right? Which is why I think, it's again, I'm using air quotes here, but it's, like, only money that you have to spend to get a free agent, whereas, like, you don't actually have to spend an asset, if that makes sense, right?
Uh-huh.
And again, I'm with you. Like, it's you can't ignore the trade market. It's just like, you know, I love a fake trade as much as the next guy, right? But it's just, you can't really, you know, I would love to say, yeah, Addison Barger and player X from the farm system will get you Brent Rooker. But, like, who's to say, right?
I think
that's the issue.
You know what I find comical, show? We've essentially, throughout this entire 2024 season, we've run the gamut on trading everybody on this roster.
True.
Okay. The only guy, though, I will say, show, that I don't think has ever been traded in the court of public opinion is Yariel Rodriguez. And hear me out on this.
All right.
You know why I think he's a very interesting trade, Chip? And I'm going to trade him right now.
So you're going to trade him?
I'm going to trade him right now. We're going to rip the Band-Aid off. We're going to trade him. Here's why. This is certainly not to the same degree or the same caliber, but hear me out. The Yankees last year, okay, the Yankees in the offseason, the trade they made to go get Juan Soto from the Padres, they were able to parlay Michael King as a premier piece of that deal. Michael King, who, yes, he pitched exceptionally well down the stretch, but it was a small sample, mind you, right? Small sample, especially as a starter. He was very good, and clearly there is a much higher ceiling. The upside is still very strong. But they took a guy who was coming off a really, really good season for them, somebody that fans were excited about at the end of the season and saying, okay, this is a guy that can be part of our solution in terms of fortifying the rotation. They took that and turned that into Juan Soto. Now, there were, of course, other aspects of that trade, but why can't the Blue Jays go and use, I mean, Horowitz is one, maybe to a lesser extent,
sure.
But I do think, weirdly, I think Yariel Rodriguez, even though he's signed to a five-year deal here, there is some built-in stability. He's probably the furthest from any fan's mind in terms of a potential trade piece. But why can't you do that with him to some extent? Why can't you,
I guess you could,
look at him, and he's not going to be the centerpiece, but he can be an integral piece to potentially trying to entice a team to make a trade of substance, of consequence, that is going to help your team offensively, pitching-wise. I don't know, but that's something that popped into my head the other day in thinking about what the Yankees did coming off a career year for Michael King and turning that into Soto, and the idea of the Blue Jays saying, huh, what if we took Yariel and we paired him with a couple of other guys or whatever, and we use that to cash in on something bigger?
I definitely think it's possible. That's for sure. It's definitely possible. I mean, you know, you better hope that he pitches good tomorrow. I'll tell you that if you want that value to be jacked up a little bit. But, I mean, he's under contract for a number of years after this, four more years after this season. I think the ceiling is still somewhat unknown for him. I mean, the floor is on the ground.
We've seen it.
Right? We've seen the floor. The floor is very, very low. But the ceiling, I think, can possibly be quite high as well. So that's definitely a possibility. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Etobicoke. Clifton in Etobicoke. Clifton, what's up today, man?
Hey, not a whole lot, fellas, this year watching some live racing from Woodbine. But
hey,
nice.
Yeah, man. Today's a Woodbine Mile Day. Just got Patrick Husband just won it.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah, anyway. So I want to talk about Davis Snyder here a little bit and Bowden Francis. Now, I've always been a big fan of guys like Davis Snyder, like these grinder type guys. You know, more than anything, man, like these guys, you know, they're going to put the time in. They're going to do the work to stay in the major leagues. You know how sometimes you see, you know, a player come up to the majors and, you know, you see them bounce around. And next thing you know, you see 12, 15 years down the road, these guys are still in the major league. He strikes me as one of those guys. Mm. And I'm very happy to see that, you know, he's starting to come around. And I know there was some, you know, call for, you know, John Schneider to send him back down to the minors to straighten things out. But I think Manager Schneider, he's probably seeing some things in this guy, too, that he really likes. And he say, you know what, I'm going to stick with him at the major league level. Let him, you know, straighten out some of these little kinks. And because there's some good qualities about this guy. He's not flashy, but fundamentally, I really like, you know, like some of the things that I'm seeing from him. And like I said, 10, 12 years down the road, Bo and Danielle, you'll see this guy, you know, like still pulling the paycheck in the major league. Hmm. Now, Bowden Francis. And I heard Danielle disagreeing with something Barker said. I'm going to do the same thing here, too, because I heard Jeff and Bart a few days ago saying that Bowden Francis, you know, like he can't be, you know, in the top three in the rotation next season. And I tend to disagree with them. And I love those guys. You know, those are my favorite guys. But here's the thing that I love about what I'm seeing from Francis. I always like when guys at this later stage of their, you know, like career, like he's 28 years old.
Yes.
I think this guy has found something, man. And I think this guy goes home after every outing because he's found something. And he goes home and he watches film because this guy, I'm telling you, man, if this guy continues to improve, I don't know how they keep him out of the top three next year. Because what this guy has done in his past four outings, man, it's not a fluke. You know, like, as someone who likes to bet on games, whenever I see, you know, a pitcher has, you know, a no-hitter or, like, in his case, a close no-hitter, I usually bet against them in the next game because usually, you know, like, for some reason, you know, they always seem to not perform, you know, as well in the next outing. But this guy came back and almost repeated in after the Angels. Yeah. And then, you know, like four outings in a row. Like, this guy has found something. So, you know, I think that this guy's going to be someone to keep a close eye on next year for the, you know, top three in the lineup. And so I said this to you before. Since Alek Manoah, I have not seen a pitcher in this rotation that whenever they take the mound, I feel confident that these guys are going to give you a solid outing. And yes, we have some good pitchers. You know, Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, these are good pitchers, but inconsistency, man. And I really like what I'm seeing from Bowden Francis. That's it, fella.
Yeah, hey, Clifton, thanks, appreciate the call, man. Best of luck with your bets down at Woodbine, that's for sure. okay, so let's talk about Bowden Francis for a couple minutes here, just because I know he didn't pitch today, but he has been.
It feels like he pitches every day.
and every time he pitches, he is electric, it seems.
Uh-huh.
Not just because of the near no-hitters, but, I mean, gosh, you take two no-hitters into the top of the ninth inning, and you're going to do something right, I'll tell you that much. But Bowden Francis, I'll say this. I think Bowden Francis is ceiling is, and I said this to you in the pregame show because we kind of got around to this somewhat in the pregame as well, but I think if he slots in in a similar vein to, and I think it's splitting hairs as to what you think. If you think is Berríos the two starter or the three starter, is Bassett the two starter or the three starter, like in terms of how you in your mind rank these guys, I think that's probably your personal preference. Yep. I would say, but let's say it's Gausman, Bassett, Berríos. Let's just say, right, 1, 2, 3. Then if that's the case, then if Francis is your third in the range of your third starter next year, I think that's fine. And I think he can do that, certainly. I think that's maybe not his ceiling, because, I mean, we've seen that the ceiling is a near no-hitter, which would be one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball on a track for the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he's probably not that guy in terms of what he'll give you every single time going out there. But he has pitched well enough that I think you have to at least consider the idea or the possibility that Baden Francis next year is, like, your, again, I'm using air quotes here, your nominal third starter. And, I mean, he's, to your point, he's 28, you said?
Yes.
So, age-wise, you know for a fact that Chris Bassett's coming off the books after next season is over. Maybe we'll see how next year goes. Does Chris Bassett finish the year as a Blue Jay, depending on how the season goes? But let's say they make the playoffs and he does stay a Blue Jay, and then he walks in the offseason, then you pretty much have a tailor-made replacement for Bassett in Bowden Francis already. Like, then your rotation would be Gausman, Berríos, Francis, essentially, right? So I think it kind of depends on how you view them and how you've cast them in your mind. But I don't think I don't think Bowden Francis is going to necessarily be, like, the ace of the rotation necessarily. But, gosh, I mean, he's played well enough in this last month plus to at least make you think of a third starter in a five-man rotation.
Yeah, I mean, they're never going to go as a team and throughout spring training. They're never going to go, this guy's our one, this is our two, the three. They're going to arrange them in a certain manner. However, even coming out of the spring training show, and you know this, there's a chance, like, Bowden Francis could start the third game. Does that mean he's the nominal third? I mean, whatever. They're not going to apply a specific number to it. But is he in the, okay, let's put it this way. Is he closer to Chris Bassett than he is to Yariel Rodriguez or to Alek Manoah or whoever the fifth star is going to be? Absolutely. He's far closer. The gap is far smaller between him and Bassett, who I would probably say in theory is the third. I would rank him third out of the three main guys, Berríos, Bassett, and Gausman. So I think he's closer to that group than he is the other guys that are fighting and vying for the final spot in the rotation.
Right.
That's how I would sort of cast it. I mean, look, all we need to say really is, from a purely historical baseball perspective, and this is in reference to what transpired, of course, earlier this week with the near no-hitter for the second time. The only pitcher in the history of the sport that has had a run that has been as immaculate as what we've seen from Bowden Francis, there's only one guy. He was a former Blue Jay. It was Dave Steeb. Dave Steeb had a four-start stretch where he almost threw two no-hitters. And the only difference was his came with two outs in the ninth both times.
Right.
And, of course, for Bowden Francis, it was leadoff
in
the ninth.
Was that before Dave Steeb threw his first no-hitter?
That was before.
It was in the 80s.
Yes, before Steeb finally broke through. He had three no-hitters, near no-hitters, that were broken up in the ninth inning.
That's tough.
That is really tough. And I said this to you earlier this week, after what transpired on Wednesday afternoon. I said at our office, just in a conversation, I mentioned, I really hope Bowden ends up being the next guy to do it. Because especially there's a built-up level of equity that he's established with fans and the scar tissue that he's developed through getting so close twice. I'm just sitting there saying, I really do hope he's the next guy to do it. And I mentioned this even in our pregame show. I also, what's really impressed me about him is the temperament, the demeanor, and the evolution of the personality. He's always been a more quiet, reserved guy, but what you're seeing now is that quiet side of him is becoming a quiet confidence. Sure, it helps when you're performing exceptionally well, but the way he's conducting himself in the clubhouse, out on the field before the game, you kind of get a sense. This guy really feels comfortable in his own skin right now and is he's sure of who he is. The fact that he belongs on this roster as a major league starter. He's talked about it openly. What has he learned about himself? That he can do this. And I think that's where, I agree with Clifton. He's found something that works for him. Maybe it's even more psychological than it is purely about having a better balance between his fastball and his splitter. But it's just the whole package right now is working for him.
I did want to get to what Clifton talked about initially, which was Davis Schneider. as yes. well. And, of course, David Schneider factoring in a major way in this ball game. So he cranks his first home run since mid-June. Like, we're talking about a time period that frankly feels like it was 2 years ago, but a time where well before the deadline, well before the All-Star break, we're talking about a time where Justin Turner and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Danny Jansen were all still taking regular ABs for this team. A time where David Schneider himself had just been promoted to the leadoff spot, essentially, when Springer was sick, and then Schneider got put in there, and he wasn't quite an everyday player yet, and we're all clamoring. I think you and I even probably had these discussions in June, but it should be David Schneider up there, and then that's kind of where it started to fall off for him. And he was great today.
Yeah.
Home run. He had an RBI single late in the game. He had a bloop single in the eighth inning as well, so a three-hit day for the Babe. This is from Nick Ashbourne, but three hits today is more than he managed in his previous 32 plate appearances, which came over a 12-game span in which he had two hits. So he had three hits today. Again, more than he had in his previous 12 games worth of plate appearances, which is wild.
Wild. I mean, there are so many different numbers that are just staggering when it comes to David Schneider and the struggles and why it feels so good to sit here today, see him go out there, play with such joy, have success. And his teammates, like, you can see how much it means to them as well because they understand what he's gone through these last few months. So the stat you referenced there, which is crazy, I had pulled even looking, you know, interestingly. So he has the three hits today. Prior to today, in the last 24 games, he was 4-for-59. 4-for-59, show. And then he goes 3-for-4 today. Here's another one. The homer he hit. Right away, as I was sitting in the press box watching it, it's that high fastball up in the zone, 91 miles an hour, right on the top upper third, top edge of the strike zone. You want to take a guess how many balls he's barreled in that location this year?
In the upper part of the strike
right
zone?
Right there. That specific, like the upper third quadrant, up high.
I'm going to guess very few.
That was just the second he's barreled up all year. Second. In that particular location, show, he was hitting 192 for the season, and he homered on a pitch up there. And you saw the confidence build. He drilled that ball to left field for the single. You know, got some, you know, it was a little bit of good fortune in the sticking the bat head out there to flip a single in there for his third hit. But, no, just happy for him, really, honestly. There aren't, you know, we talk about guys you're happy for, you root for on occasion. I mean, everybody loves David Schneider, and you root for him. His story's great, obviously. You know, this guy that just kind of willed his way to the major leagues. You know, he was never supposed to factor into the equation for this franchise a year ago, and then slowly but steadily chipped away to get an opportunity. And you just, you know, they've been loyal to him here in the second half of the season, and you just hope the season ends positively for him so that he can at least go into the offseason feeling good, come into spring training and feel like he's got a legitimate opportunity to compete for a job, independent of what moves they make this winter, because he will be fighting for a job, we assume, given that we think they're going to be more aggressive in trying to supplement the roster.
I'll tell you what, if Joey Loperfido with this adductor strain is out for any amount of time, if Dalton Varsho apparently has been dealing with some shoulder stuff, if he's out for any more time, or they're just not comfortable playing either of them, I mean, certainly Nathan Lucas has been very good, but Lucas and Schneider are going to see a little bit more run here, right? I mean, because beyond that, it's essentially, what is it, just Springer who you're really going to see out there that much? And I mean, hey, great. Springer has been good defensively. You know, you want to see a little bit more from the bat for him because he's cooled off a little bit even after having that nice string. But, I mean, if those two guys, Loperfido and Varsho, are not going to see a lot of time down the stretch, then, hey, I mean, like it or not, you are going to see David Schneider play more. And, hey, I mean, even if Leo Jimenez misses time, they're just going to be just less of a log jam between left field and second base for David Schneider to play. And, I mean, there are only 13 games left in the season now, but the rest of this stretch, essentially, is going to be about seeing as many of these guys as possible. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. It is always open. We will go to the text line after the break, and I will throw out that question for you guys to be entered into a draw to win a number of Blue Jays prizes. Still lots to come. On the other side, you're listening to Jay's Talk Show and Daniele with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I feel like there are always mistakes when I go the other way. I'm not trying to do that. I feel like I'm just catching it a little late just because my power is through the middle and to left center. But I always try to make sure I'm just hitting the ball
ever
hard.
Ever since Danny Jansen left, he doesn't know how to pull the ball. It's
I was using Jano's bat today, so I feel like that was a big issue. That was a big thing. I texted him. I told him I was using his bat, so when he comes here, he's going to give me a couple.
That is Davis Schneider chatting with the media about having a three-hit day. I think that was Ernie Clement chiming in there about giving the old chirp to the Babe, but it's funny. I do wonder. I wonder what Danny Jansen's reply was when it comes to hey, I'm using your bat. By the way, I kind of just figured you like took some of those with you when you left. I guess he just has a whole bunch left over, but that's pretty great. That's David Schneider again chatting with the media after a three-hit day, including a home run as the Blue Jays beat the Cardinals 7-2. They win the series, and tomorrow they will aim for a sweep. Yariel Rodriguez will hit the hill for the Jays. Miles Michaelis will go for the St. Louis Cardinals. Joe, Ali, Daniele Franceschi are here with you on Jays Talk here until the top of the hour, so I've got about 13 minutes to go. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590 is the text line. The people's text line, of course, always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. All right, let's throw out that trivia question, Daniele.
Yes.
I did say we have some stuff to give away. We'll give away some prizes this weekend. We got the next weekend as well when the Blue Jays are at the Trop taking on the Rays. And then, of course, the following weekend as well. And my final Jays Talk will be on Saturday. And the Marlins will be in town, so we'll be down here at the Rogers Center. So lots of stuff to give away over these next couple of weekends. We have a couple of Carabana hats remaining. We have a Bobuchet bobblehead. And we have the City Connect short sleeve hoodie from a couple days ago to give away as well. So, okay, in honor of Jose Berríos continuing to rack up the wins, again, he is now at 16 wins this season. He continues to push that career high. I want you to text us the answer to this question. Again, 590-590, name and location. If you get it right, you'll be entered into a draw to win a prize from that list of your choice. So with wins at a premium these days, who was the most recent Blue Jay to win 20 games in a season? I want you to text me the name of that pitcher to 590-590, name and location. And I really do need your name and location in this case. I always need it, but we absolutely need it in this case.
It is mandatory.
It is mandatory, yes, and you will be entered into a draw to win. So again, the most recent Blue Jay to win 20 games in a single season, text us that answer to 590-590, name and location. I looked it up. Apparently, it has Blue Jays who have won 20 games in a season this century, so since the year 2000, because, of course, in the 90s, Roger Clemens did it a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Hentgen did it. But from the year 2000 onwards, it has only happened four times. Now, I'll give some clues here. The first guy to do it in this century, I should say, David Wells. I believe that was in the year 2000. Doc, of course, did it. I mean, it's an easy guess. Doc Halliday, one of the greatest pitchers ever played for this franchise. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Doc did it twice.
Impressive.
And so it is not Doc or David Wells. There's another guy. He is the most recent person to do this. And so he texted us the name of that guy. Again, 590-590, name and location. All right, I wanted to chat a little bit about, because we got a bunch of texts here about Vladdy.
Yes.
And Vladdy knocking in his 500th career ribby, the youngest Blue Jay to hit that benchmark with the Blue Jays, and the second quickest Blue Jay to hit that benchmark in terms of games played, Carlos Delgado. If you had to guess, like, one guy, I would have guessed Carlos Delgado. I think a lot of people would have.
Pretty safe.
Seems like a pretty safe bet. Carlos Delgado is the only guy to get there faster in terms of games, although age-wise, Delgado was 28 when he did it. Vladdy, of course, is 25, so that makes Vladdy the youngest. But, man, that is crazy. It just really underscores that if Vladdy does sign some big-time contract with the Blue Jays, and I tend to believe it will happen, if that does happen at some point, Daniele, I got to think that, let's say he signs like a 10-year deal or 11-year deal, 12-year deal, let's just say, as is the expectation, by the end of that contract, he will be the leader in basically every Blue Jays category.
Like, yes.
I say this as someone who has Carlos Delgado at the very top of my favorite athletes list, regardless of sport. Carlos Delgado, who's actually here the other day, by the way, when the Mets were in town.
He was chopping it up with Gibby.
Yeah, Ben, Gibby, Buck Martinez, they all were chopping it up down there. Of course, I was at the station, and Ben was like, sure, I got to meet Carlos Delgado. I'm like, damn it, the one day I'm not at the ballpark. Damn you, Ben. But no, it was pretty cool. And by the way, the pictures of him without a goatee did kind of throw me a little bit, because that's why I picture him in my head. But yeah, I mean, Carlos Delgado might get surpassed But of all people, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., if Vladdy stays healthy and signs a big-time deal to stay here long-term.
Yeah, I mean, also, Carlos Delgado looks still pretty...
He looks great.
He looks ripped.
He looks great.
Man, he's shredded for... I don't know how old he is now, but yes, even though he's done playing baseball, still in terrific shape. If Vladdy, provided he signs a long-term deal, he is here with the Blue Jays long-term, whether that's over the span of one contract or multiple contracts, I mean, I think we're going to then eventually get to the point where we're going to have a conversation about the greatest Blue Jay of all time. I think that might happen at some point. So I don't think that's incredibly far-fetched.
Sure.
You think about the individual statistical achievements and anomalies that will have been achieved by him during his time over that period. And then you couple that with, let's say, theoretically, hypothetically, the Blue Jays can cash in a couple playoff appearances that result in extended runs and, God forbid, ends up in a World Series. If that's the case, then sure enough, there's your pathway, and we're having a different conversation. That there is 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, if he were to sign long-term, as you alluded to, he would own the record books in a variety of different categories, without question. Offensively, across the board, home runs, you know, the RBI total, you know, I don't know, doubles, extra, like, think about a lot of these big categories. There's a very good chance he can impose his will because he's so young. It helps that he's been in the big leagues for a while, and yet he's only in his mid-20s. But if he's able to couple that individual success with some degree of team success in the postseason, our conversation evolves to something that is much bigger. I firmly believe that. That was the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw the 500 career RBI stat come, you know, shared by the Blue Jays, that he was the youngest player ever. And then, of course, you saw SN Stats put out that he was the second fastest player ever to do it. It seems like every time he reaches a milestone, he's the first or second to do it, and there's always something that is new and fresh. I firmly believe our conversation will be interesting if we get to the point where he signs a long-term deal. Vladdy's going to be in a position where he's going to be among the greats in the history of this franchise.
Can I give you my I don't know how bold a prediction this is these days anymore, but can I give you a bold prediction for Vladdy?
Yeah, for sure.
He signs a 10-plus year. I have no inside information on this. This is just a bold prediction just for fun, but he signs a 10-plus year extension before Halloween.
Ooh.
Yeah, before Halloween. Maybe on Halloween, who knows. But before the month of October is done, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. signs
Will the World Series be finished?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I don't know.
I think if it's one of those things where, like, if it goes seven games, I think the World Series ends, like, the first week of November.
Yes, November 2nd would be game 7 of the World Series.
So let's say the World Series goes six games. I think technically it would end in the month of October, I think. But depends on where the games are, I suppose, right? But yeah, so I think it, with the off season in theory starting at, like, the beginning of November for the most part, I'm going to say that Vladdy signs his extension before the end of October. What
okay, I definitely think it's possible. I just feel like based on recent history, the last few years, this front office tends to move a little slower. So they might need a little bit more of a firm deadline than that, Joe, to arrive at at some level of conclusion about, are we spending money? What are we doing?
You're not wrong.
Deadlines drive decisions, and you hear that all the time. I think that might be applicable in this scenario. I'm still not fully removed from my personal belief that, and there's probably, in my mind, 10-15% chance, I feel like, why wouldn't they sign a shorter-term deal if you're Vlad in his camp, to stay with the Blue Jays? And if you're the Blue Jays, drive up that AAV, but keep them in the fold. I mean, heck, we've seen this in hockey. Austin Matthews refuses to sign a full-length, long-term deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs, yet that didn't prohibit the team from giving him the captaincy and throwing the letter on his jersey. So I don't know. It's just something I'm curious about, is why does Vladdy need to sign for 10-plus years? Why can't he just, you know, say, hey, I might be okay to do something that's 3 or 4 years and bridge the gap so that I can hit the market again when I'm still, you know, in theory at his peak? Because he'll only be in his late 20s at that point.
You mean, yeah, like if he signs like a five-year deal or a four-year deal.
If you did 3+1, he then, let's say, gets the opportunity to hit a market at 28 again?
I just think the only thing, it doesn't, I think, protect you adequately enough from enough things. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't protect you adequately enough from having a down year, in that short time span doesn't protect you adequately enough from having like a really serious injury, which is probably the thing I would personally be worried about the most. I think those are really the two things. Because I mean, like, you're right. Like, he comes from a family where he has more money than he'll ever need anyways, even if he never played baseball ever.
Bingo.
But I do think that if you're just talking about cementing his own legacy and, you know, I mean, I wonder how much the Players Union would say, like, nah, you gotta, you know what I mean? You kind of have to, you know, to a certain extent. I don't know how much that is a factor in baseball versus, you know, a quarterback taking, like, Tom Brady taking a $10 million deal. Like, the NFL Players Association would be like, hell no. You absolutely not,
you
right?
You see the market these days?
Yeah, so that's what I mean. But at the same time, I think it's, for me, I would say the reason for that is injury. Let's get a couple texts here before we go. David from Dartmouth. Here's the deal. If Vladdy wants to be a Blue Jay, should any GM trade him away, he best go to the Toronto Barrel Company, buy one that fits, and go drive down to Niagara Falls. That's dark, but kind of funny, I will say. Stephen Williams Lake and Jay from Regina both having questions about Nathan Lucas. He did a great job running home there. That's from Stephen and Williams Lake. Solid hustle. Jay from Regina. If I were Lucas, another great game from him, I would definitely ask for a trade in the offseason. He needs to be playing every day. I tend to agree.
Yep.
I think, you know, we had this conversation about rebuilding the bullpen in the pregame show, and I think it's worth restating it very quickly here, Daniele. It's simply that, you know, when it comes to the bullpen, there's a lot of work to do, obviously. That goes without saying. They played well in the last couple of days, especially yesterday, Yennis Cabrera aside. But I only mention it because you will have to find new guys to rebuild things there. Having said that, Nathan Lucas easily could be traded in the offseason as well as he's been playing for a moderately good bullpen arm. And that's how I think you'll at least start the ball rolling on essentially completely remaking the bullpen for next year.
Agreed. Also, show because he's waited so long, he's in a position where I think the Jays would do him a solid and say, look, you are a big leaguer. Yeah. You know, everybody says that to a man. John Schneider says it all the time.
Sure.
He's a big leaguer. And I think because he's 30 years old, because he's legitimately waited so long for a real opportunity, they would do right by him and say, all right, we have needs as well. Let's find something that works and let's actually help you in a way. Let's get you to a situation where you're going to be in a position to play either every day or close to every day on a major league roster. So I think it would be mutually beneficial.
What is always mutually beneficial, Daniele, is having you on with me at Jays Talk. I guess this is your last Jays Talk of the season.
This was
lot of fun, man. Thanks for doing it.
I appreciate it, show. This has been a lot of fun. I also just want to say thank you to all our listeners, everybody that's been along for this journey in 2024 while I've been here. Love doing the Jays Talks. Been a lot of fun interacting with everybody. Texts, phone calls, tweets. Really have enjoyed it. It's such a privilege and an honor. So thank you very much, show, for having me throughout this journey in 2024.
You are the man, and I hope we get to do it many, many more times.
Likewise.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Show Ali. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown West Control Centers in Mississauga on Lakeshore Road and on Watline Avenue. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele Franceschi, Ben Shulman, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Tom Young, Andrew Adams, Nick Blackmore, I'm Show. We are out of here. It'll be Yariel Rodriguez, Miles Michaelis on the mound tomorrow. Have a great Saturday night. Talk to you later.